Well, good morning. This is Per Fagrang, and we're going to talk about the death of Marine Colonel Jim Szabo. Now, this happened almost 20 years ago, but it kind of surfaced recently, this person who apparently tried to shoot up the Pentagon and was shot instead. This is one of his concerns. And the implication is that, well, this case is only of concern to disturbed individuals, which is not the case. This is a very important case, and it has not been really resolved. There's a lot of controversy about it, even though it's been virtually forgotten. And so our guest is Dr. David Szabo, who is the brother of Marine Colonel Jim Szabo. David Szabo, welcome to KABU.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, why don't we kind of set the scene here? I mean, Colonel Szabo was in the morning. He was having coffee with his wife, and his daughter went to off to school, and his wife went to church for about an hour. And then what happened?
Well, that's correct. It was at 8:30 exactly in the morning, and Sally, who is Colonel Szabo's wife, was just about to leave to go to a weekday morning mass. She was somewhat delayed because of a call, so she didn't get out at, you know, maybe 10 or 15 after 8 to attend the 8:30 mass after. Completing that call was exactly at 8:30, and she was right at the front door to leave when there was another call coming in. Colonel Szabo was watching television. It was right in the beginning of Desert Storm. Sally had her hand on the doorknob while Colonel Szabo answered the phone and addressed the individual as, "This is Colonel Szabo." Sally hesitated to leave. There wasn't apparently a answer on the phone, for Colonel Szabo again said, "This is Colonel Szabo," and after hesitation, a third time. Just at that moment, Sally left, got in her car, and drove off the base for a church that is only a few minutes off the base. She knew she would be late, so she just intended to receive communion. The Szabo family are Catholics, and she was just going to be right back. We don't know for 100% sure who made the call, but we have 99.9% circumstantial evidence who did it, because Colonel Szabo turned the television on mute. And he would have only done that if he was to leave for a very short period of time to return and then resume watching what he had been. Sally Szabo returned approximately 50 minutes later at 20 after 9 and found the television still on mute, called for her husband, Jimmy, couldn't find him, went into the kitchen, he wasn't there, looked out the kitchen window, and saw his body laying immovable in the backyard on the lawn. She ran out, obviously, knelt down, and there was a huge bump on the back of his head behind his right ear. She cradled his head. Blood was pouring out of his right ear, and he wasn't breathing. She ran through the house, screaming, out the front door, and then just a few feet over to the neighbor's house of Colonel Joe Underwood. He was the chief of staff of El Toro. She ran in saying, "Jimmy is dead. Jimmy is dead." With that, his wife, Underwood's wife, said, "Joe, this has gone too far." Underwood ran out the kitchen door, through his back lawn and through a gate into the Sabo backyard. He stopped, and he was at least 50 feet to 60 feet shy of Colonel Sabo's body. He stopped, he turned around, ran into his house, picked up the phone to call the base commander, and yelled into the phone, "Jimmy is dead. He shot himself in the mouth." Now, you have to remember, Sally never said what happened, never said to Joe Underwood where Colonel Sabo's body was. And from the distance of 50 or 60 feet, which was the closest where Underwood came to the body at that point, he mentioned and stated that Jimmy killed himself. He shot himself in the mouth. Well, the shotgun was under the body. You wouldn't even see the shotgun. So that is the scenario of those first few minutes when Sally discovered the body.
Well, and then the autopsy was not done by the military. It was done by the county coroner. I don't know if that's unusual in a case like this.
And, well, it's not only unusual, it's totally illegal.
Oh, okay. And the
Colonel Sabo's body was found in his backyard on mm-hmm. the base. It mm-hmm. was under total federal jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
El Toro is only 50, less than that, maybe 30 minutes from San Diego, where the large naval hospital is, the Balboa Naval Facility. And a medical examiner was in residence at that time. I checked on that. By law, the body had to be transported to the naval facility where a medical examiner was to conduct the postmortem examination. However, when you look at all of the SECNAVINS, that is the Secretary of the Navy instruction manuals, dealing with a medical examiner, there are a lot of checks and balances for a incident like this. And it is quite likely that one of those checks and balances would have been exploitive in finding out the true nature of what happened to Colonel Sabo. Contrary to these orders, these laws, military laws, the body was transported to the Orange County Coroner's Office. And a medical autopsy was performed the following day. And that same day, the death certificate was signed as the manner of death being suicide. Now, none of the evidence that I'm talking about, gunshot residue, photographs of the autopsy, photographs of the crime scene, the developing of the skull, of the x-rays of the body, interviews of witnesses or neighbors and what have you, none of that was available. Yet, the determination had already been made. In less than 24 hours when that body was received by the coroner in Orange County, that the death was suicide. As we discovered, the overwhelming evidence, and I'm not talking lightly, the evidence proved to anybody out of a sophomore in high school with a modicum of common sense, that it was impossible to be a suicide. It had to be a murder.
Let's quickly run down some of that evidence. One was you mentioned there was a big bump on his head.
There was a large, and then when I say bump, I'm talking about slicing a moderate-sized grapefruit. There was that size of bump beginning right behind the right ear, mm-hmm. extending to the midline of the occiput, the very back of the skull, and then going down to the base of the neck. And there was blood coming out of his right ear.
So that would indicate he got hit on the head.
Right. He had mm-hmm. a basilar skull fracture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you have to remember is, under that large bump was a skull fracture.
Mm-hmm.
I want to accentuate the word depressed. Obviously, if you had an intraoral wound, it would blow the skull out, obviously. We're talking about a 12-gauge shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
Here what we have is a depressed, and it's, I'm a neurologist with about 28 years of clinical experience and about 25 years of forensic neurological experience. This is one of the largest, most profound depressed skull fractures I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the skull fracture was a large blood clot, and the inner surface of the scalp in that area is described even by the Naval Investigative Service as massive scalp hemorrhage. Without any other information, this proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is classic external blunt force trauma. The X-rays were never even mentioned by the medical examiner. It took me 4 years to find the X-rays, which mm-hmm. I did. Obviously, they were hidden from me. I found the X-rays, sent the autopsy pictures to university professors, the head of the department, chairman of the department, University of Minnesota, neurosurgery and neuroradiology, neuroradiology, University of Colorado, and the neuroradiologist with the University of South Dakota Medical School. All of them say unequivocally that this was classic external blunt force trauma, and that it could not have occurred before it had to have occurred before this individual was
mm-hmm.
shot.
Let's get on to some of the other evidence, because I want to save some time to go into why he might have been killed.
Okay.
Now, this blow to the head, it led to him breathing blood into his lungs.
Well, exactly. Let me say, there's a difference between like a sudden death and instantaneous death.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few ways you can get instantaneous death is absolutely destroying the brainstem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, destroying it. Nothing
right.
less. If that happens, you are absolutely paralyzed instantaneously. You can't move anything.
Mm-hmm.
To breathe, you need respiratory muscles, and those are skeletal muscles, and you have to have an intact brainstem. Well, not only didn't you have an intact brainstem, the autopsy states there is no observable brainstem remaining, and there is total disintegration of the upper spinal cord, which you would expect with a barrel of a 12-gauge shotgun a half an inch away from the brainstem. So it would be absolutely impossible for any breathing to have occurred. Yet, the right lung of Colonel Sabo had almost a half a liter of blood inhaled into the right lung. Now, he was found lying on his right side.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, for that to have occurred, he had to be having major inhalation, aspirating the blood into the right lung. Passive flow of blood could not have gone into the parenchyma of the tissues of the lung, which again were described by the autopsy surgeon as aspirated blood with purplish-reddish, a discoloration of the right lung as opposed to the left lung.
So basically,
the blood is in the cells, in the alveoli.
So the blow on the head and the blood in the lungs had to happen before the gunshot. And also,
he had to be actively breathing mm-hmm. and very, very deep inspiration, which, by the way, occurs when you have a brainstem, severe brainstem injury.
Mm-hmm.
You have hyperventilation.
And then some other evidence, there was no gunshot residue on the colonel's hands or his clothing. There were no fingerprints on the shotgun, and there was very little blood scattered around from this shot in the head. So all this adds
up. Yes, all of that is true. There was not
mm-hmm.
one a fingerprint of Colonel Sabo's on the weapon,
mm-hmm.
and he had to handle it majorly if he was to have shot himself.
Sure.
There was no gunshot residue on his right hand, which had to have been the one depressing the trigger. The gun was sent away to three separate major investigative agencies: the Department of Criminal Investigation, South Dakota, place in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, which is used by most of the agencies in the country to because of electron microscopy examination for GSR, gunshot residue, and a forensic consulting firm in La Jolla, California. And they all said that that gun leaked great amounts of gunshot residue from the trigger housing and from the breech. And Colonel Sabo's hand had to have been around the breech and the trigger housing to have depressed the trigger.
Now, if somebody came in and killed him, they would have, would seem to me, they would have to know that his wife was out of the house, unless they intended to kill her, too.
Well, no, this was to be a murder-suicide. Remember I said that exactly at 8:30, Sally Sabo was still in the house. And it was after the Colonel Sabo said for the third time, this is Colonel Sabo, that she left and then removed her car from the driveway, easily seen by the next-door neighbor. And Colonel Sabo turned the television on mute. And the dogs were in the backyard, and the neighbor, Colonel Wood, was deathly afraid of the German Shepherd. And the German Shepherd and the other dog were found locked in the garage following Sally Sabo's leaving the house.
Well, let's
obviously, Colonel Sabo put the dogs in the backyard, from the backyard into the garage.
Now, let's get on to the reasons why he might have been killed. Colonel Sabo was aware or strongly suspected that there were drug flights coming into this El Toro Marine Air Base, and that he suspected that there were drug flights coming in. Tell us more about that.
Well, number one, we do know that Colonel Sabo was involved in weapons transfers that he considered was a clandestine activity that was totally in line with the Department of Defense and with the White House and with the Marine Corps, that weapons going into Central America in the Iran-Contra business. He cooperated with that, had a minimum of three private meetings with Ollie North in Arizona. We even know the individual, an ex-Marine, who would pick Colonel Sabo up at the Sky Harbor Airport in Arizona and drive to these meetings. This individual then would drive Colonel Sabo back to Sky Harbor, where he then would fly back to El Toro. So we know that Colonel Sabo was involved in activity that he considered covert but legal. The day before Colonel Sabo was killed, he learned of the C-130s that were leaving El Toro and other military bases with weapons were returning to military bases loaded with drugs, primarily cocaine, but some with tremendous bales of marijuana. These were then sold to finance further covert weapons transfers. Colonel Sabo found this out probably less than 24 hours before his death, and he told his neighbor, Underwood, who then gave the message to the commander of the base, General Adams, that indeed, I discovered I am going to tell this, I won't tolerate this, and if I have to go to a court-martial, I will disclose it in a court-martial. Shortly after that announcement to Underwood, Colonel Sabo told that to Underwood. Underwood arrived back at Colonel Sabo's house at about 7 o'clock in the evening before he died. And Underwood put a finger in Colonel Sabo's face and he said, "You will never go to a court-martial, and I mean never." And, well, Indeed, he didn't. He was dead by sometime after 8:30 actually 8:35 on the following morning, and 9 o'clock the following morning. And we know 9 o'clock because a lieutenant colonel stopped at Colonel Sabo's house while Sally was still away at mass, and he waited on the porch because he saw Colonel Sabo's car, Corvette, at the driveway, actually at a curb in front of the house, and knocking at the door, having no response. He thought Colonel Sabo was maybe taking a shower. He had to return some important documents to Colonel Sabo that Colonel Sabo wanted that morning, so he didn't leave. So in that interim, Colonel Sabo was lying unconscious, probably not yet shot, in the backyard. The shooting took place probably between 10 after 9 and 20 after 9 before Sally returned home.
Well, also there was some testimony by an MP sergeant, Randall Robinson, who he had seen these unmarked C-130s late at night parked on sort of a edge of the air base. And he said that from what he could see, the crew had long hair, so they obviously weren't military people. And this this happened 4 to 6 months before the colonel's death.
Well, yeah, that's correct. There were flights coming into El Toro in the middle of the night after the field was closed down. Closed down usually at about 7:30 at night, at the latest. And these would come in the middle of the night. One of the CIA contractor pilots is one of my witnesses who is helping me in my investigation, who flew many flights into El Toro and other military bases with cocaine and other drugs, and had flown weapons out from various military bases into Central and South America. And he is one of our witnesses, who, by the way, did give testimony to the Kerry Commission in 1988 and 89. And this man has been interviewed, as I say, by the Senate. It's now classified. However, I have copies of much of the testimony.
Also, this Sergeant Robinson he says that he was warned by Colonel Underwood to stay away from the airfield.
Well, that's correct. He complained to Underwood about these flights, and Underwood told him point blank, don't you ever go near those flights. By the way, this is an MP, this Randy Robinson, with about 16 years experience. He was in the neighborhood when the body was discovered, and Underwood notified General Adams, who then sent out a message to the provost marshal to get to the Sabo backyard. That went over the general radios for the MPs in the at the base. And so immediately, Sergeant Robinson went to Colonel Sabo's house. Everybody knew where Colonel Sabo lived. He was, remember, the third in command of the base. And he was one of the first at the scene, getting in there in the backyard at the time that the provost marshal and his deputy came. And there was no a patio chair on top of Colonel Sabo. It was only later on that somebody moved a patio chair on top of Colonel Sabo to show or to imply that he sat in the Colonel Sabo sat in the chair while he was sitting, put the gun in his mouth. Made up, falsified crime scene.
So let me ask you, there have been one or two hearings in Congress. So what is happening now? Where are we on this investigation? It seems to have been largely forgotten.
Well, it has been and it hasn't been. The chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, now retired from California, Duncan Hunter, inserted into the Defense Authorization Bill for fiscal year 2004 a section 584 that demanded and ordered the Secretary of Defense to reinvestigate the death of Colonel Szabo. And it was to be done by a non-Department of Defense investigation team. And the one who's conducting the investigation was to have been, by order, a non-military board-certified forensic pathologist. Dr. Szabo, was to be part of the investigation. And all of the experts that I have retained over, quote, now it's nearly 20 years, not 10 years, as your announcer meant, were to be interviewed, and their opinions were to be incorporated into the final report presented to the Senate and House Armed Services Committee. The investigation did not take place. It was supposed to be completed in 6 months and to be started within 30 days of signing of the bill. Well, 3 months later, there was no investigation, not even a beginning of the investigation. Doug and Hunter called a meeting, and I was called from my home in South Dakota to D.C., to Washington, to Congressman Chairman Doug and Hunter's office. The Deputy Secretary of Defense was there, and he stated that, well, the contract was going to be completed with the Iowa State University in 2 days. And the investigation will begin on the following Monday. This was a Tuesday. And we found out that 2 months later, it still hadn't begun, and that the Iowa State University refused to comply with the Department of Defense. And with that, they were only able to hire a man by the name of Dr. John Nordby, who wasn't an MD at all. He had his PhD was in philosophy. And he gave a report that was, it was so, I can only say this, and please, this, I'm being kind, it was garbage.
Mm.
And it had no scientific basis. He refused to talk to the experts, and I'm talking about chairman of departments of neurosurgery, neurology, the head of the UCLA, the chairman of the Department of Neurophysiology and Biology for the UCLA Medical School, who gave a report unequivocally Colonel Szabo was murdered. This man is the world's, and I'm not exaggerating, most prestigious authority on the brain's control of respiration. Mm. His name is Dr. Jack Feldman.
We're getting to near the end of our time here,
okay.
So it would seem to me that, you know, that if all this is true, then the U.S. government, Department of Defense, is acting with impunity. They can kind of get away with anything. Do you have, if people want to get more information, do you have a website that they can go to?
Yes. Everybody should, and you should spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to colonelsabow.com, colonelsabow.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there are a lot of links from that website. You should also look at Salem, S-A-L-E-M, -news.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's an other excellent website, and it's called Mike's a Tech. That's M as in Mary, EIXATECH.com, and just scroll down to Szabo Reports.
Okay.
And then just Google Colonel Szabo.
Right. Okay, we've been talking with Dr. David Szabo about the killing of his brother, Marine Colonel Jim Szabo. This is a story that should not be forgotten. It needs to be investigated. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Okay, stay tuned for Air Cascadia.